Ladies and gentlemen, welcome back. You are here with us on Tangential Banter. As always, I am Ben Mel, and I'm here with my co-host, Jack Korzenowski.
And Jack Korzenowski is chopping vegetables right now, so I apologize for any background noise you might hear. I'll try to keep myself muted, but sometimes I might forget to mute myself or forget to unmute myself, because I'm trying to be respectful. But, I have limited time in my busy schedule, so, you're getting a taste of real life here, folks.
Yeah, so count your lucky stars that Jack even graced us with his presence today for this podcast.
It's just an hour in the life of Jack Korzenowski from Tangential Banter.
I just realized that your initials are JK. You should just say that all the time. JK.
JK. Yep. JK. It's come up JK. Before. A lot less than you would expect. I thought people would make a lot of jokes about that, but not really.
They could. They could say... They can make jokes about it and then say just K, JK. My initials are BAM or BAM. So,
if you take the initial out, it's BM.
That's why I always do three. I always include my middle initial when I do initials.
Oh my gosh. I just realized that.
Don't need that association.
Oh my gosh.
I'm just a BM. Yep. Okay. What were we talking about right before we started recording? It was about some Navy experiment or something?
Yes. So this wasn't a topic that we came in planned with. As we were just, getting on the call and starting to get everything set up, I was, because I'm chopping up vegetables, I was cleaning out the container that the last batch was in. And I swirled it, there's a bunch of little stuff left behind, little scraps. And I got some water in there, swirled around, kind of scrubbed it down, then threw it in my sink, poured it out my sink and ran the garbage disposal. And I was like, why do we call it a garbage disposal? And then Ben was like, maybe we should just get like incinerators. And then I remembered something I heard years ago about, I don't know. I for some reason think it was the US Navy. I don't know if that part of it's true, but apparently they were trying to get like some incinerator on like because I think it was in the context of an aircraft carrier, which is, U.S. Navy. And these incinerators aren't just normal incinerators, but they were like, I don't know if they were nuclearly powered or what, but they would burn. Burn's probably not even the right word. They would incinerate so hot that no matter what you threw into it, it would like molecularly break it down so much that it would actually end up releasing energy. More energy than it took to incinerate it. So this incinerator would actually, it'd basically be like a generator that you would fuel with just garbage that you're trying to get rid of. And then because it's broken down so much, what you end up with is, this inert waste that you can just, probably sprinkle anywhere and it would be fine.
Like ash.
Yeah. And then Ben thought, hey, if you threw garbage into the sun, like, could you get it the sun to generate more energy?
And or would it like dispose of your garbage at such a molecular level that it's no longer harmful? You know what I mean? Because it's one of the downsides of like landfills and things like that is your garbage is, as it's decomposing, it's harming life around it. And so I was thinking, what's the cleanest way to dispose of trash? I feel like the hotter your incinerator gets, the more clean it's going to be.
True, or I would say intuitively I agree. I would also say it doesn't matter how hot your incinerator is if it's as far away as the sun.
That's also true.
Because you said...
That's a win-win.
Can you burn it so hot in the sun that it's not going to harm anything? I'm like, I don't think it matters how hot the sun burns. If you deliver something all the way to the sun, I don't think we got to worry about it anymore.
When you're standing on the surface of the sun, the last concern in your mind is what effect the trash next to you is going to have in 100 years' time.
Yes. The sun's surface, if I remember right, it's shockingly not that hot.
Yeah. It's only lightning is orders of magnitude hotter, right? I think.
Yeah, I think so. But lightning is also ridiculously hot. But I think like the surface of the sun's only like 1500 degrees wrong Fahrenheit. Which is like there are plenty of
Did you
things.
say wrong, Fahrenheit?
There are plenty of things like on Earth that we like man-made stuff that get way hotter than that. I know it's 15, like the number starts at 15, but I can't remember if it's 1500 or 15,000. If it's 15,000, then okay, you got us beat, Mr. Sun. But you'd expect the sun to be hotter even than that. And which it is way in the core, but
I just got to thinking that the equation to convert Celsius to Fahrenheit is you multiply by 1.8 and add 32. And then I realized that it's the equation of a line,
yeah.
right? Mx plus b. I was like, oh. I mean, it kind of makes sense, but I just never thought of it in those terms before.
And if you draw that line on a graph, and then you just draw the graph, y equals x, which just gives you a slope of one, no offset, and you see where those two lines intersect, it's at minus 40. So if somebody says, oh, it's minus 40 out, and somebody else asks, oh, Fahrenheit or Celsius, the answer is yes.
It's both,
It's both.
or it doesn't matter.
Right. Well, you
But you
can't say it
could.
doesn't matter because it's not negative 40 in other scales like Rankine or Kelvin.
Well, but if they ask Celsius or Fahrenheit, it doesn't matter. Like if
Yes.
they've limited their selection to those two.
Right.
But you
Minus
could
40
also
for
say
those two.
at minus 40, it can't be Rankine or Kelvin. So
Oh, good point.
you've already limited it.
Yep. That's a good point.
So anytime somebody says it's minus 40 and then asks for units, it literally doesn't matter.
Yep.
So going back to the conversation about the surface of the sun, that reminded me that my like bucket list, it's not really a bucket list in the true sense because I'd be dead when it happens, but I would like to have essentially I'd like to be cremated, but only if I can follow specific forms of cremation. So, option one, preference wise, would be to have my remains jettisoned into the sun or like launched on a missile into the sun.
Oh.
And that way, like my energy kind of just gives a little blast back out into the universe as I get scorched into, fragments. Option two, which the more I think about it is maybe even more awesome,
More
except that
metal.
it's been more metal, except it's been done before, which is the whole like funeral pyre in a boat with your sword kind of a situation.
Ooh, that would be cool. You need to get a
That's
sword first, though, and you need to like,
I have a sword.
but you need to grow like a what's the word I'm looking for? Like a reputation of it. Like we can't just like, I mean, we could like just buy a sword or just use that sword that nobody knows that you have and put on your pyre and say, where did that sword come from? Oh, it's Ben's. Oh, I didn't know that. But like, if you're the sword guy, yeah, everywhere he walks, he's carrying a sword.
I just have
You're
a
going to get
sword so
arrested a
flourishing.
lot. But it would be worth
Yes.
it because then you'd have this reputation, and then you could capitalize on that for your funeral.
Yeah, so like living my whole life with a sword, getting arrested a bunch, specifically to have a more epic funeral.
Yes,
I
totally
think.
worth Wait, can you get arrested for just walking around with a sword? Like,
I
is
don't
that
think so.
a thing
I
as
mean,
well?
you're gonna get stopped a lot, but I don't think you could get arrested unless you're threatening people with it.
Yeah, that's true. I know, what was it? Viggo Mortensen, when he was playing
Yes.
Aragorn, like
Yes.
there was one time, I think it was either one time he either did this all the time, but then this incident only happened once, or he did it one time and then the incident happened where he was like walking around the nearby town with a sword just on like on his person, and somebody like called the cops on him.
I was actually watching the special features over the past few months with Sarah,
Nice.
and that he talks about that story. And essentially, what happened is he was doing like practicing sword play somewhere on their set, and he took the sword with him everywhere. So he would have it like if they went to dinner, he would just have it propped up against a chair at the dinner table at the restaurant, like basically treating it as if he was Aragorn and his life depended on keeping that sword with him at all times and whatever. But that particular day, he was like rehearsing some of his sword play or whatever moves he'd been practicing with their sword master as he was walking off the lot. And so he's just like walking down the street, basically shadow fighting with his sword. And yeah, one of the neighbors was like, there's a man with a sword, like waving it wildly in the street. So yeah, you probably couldn't get away with that.
If he was within walking distance of the studio, because I don't think where they filmed was a particularly, you know, big town, or the areas where they shot were particularly big town. So you'd think that the locals would know what was going on, which if I remember right from the special features, like the locals are pretty in with it, like thought it was really cool. So I'm surprised somebody didn't see, you know, the guy playing Aragorn, who I'm sure most of the people would recognize and say, oh, it's just Aragorn, you know, practicing his swordplay.
I mean, at the time, like, Wellington's not a huge city, and given the amount of people who were employed by, like, Weta Workshop and Stone Street Studios and everything like that, it kind of, I imagine it having, like, the influence that our company has in the local community.
Ah, yes, where, the company.
You know what I mean? Where it's just, like, everywhere you go, you run into somebody who works there, and so everybody knows a little bit about it. It's just kind of in the back of everyone's mind that they're doing things, and they have some influence in the community, but guess it's not. Also possible, because the story wasn't super clear, it's also possible he was somewhere off-site at, like, at a, you know, sword training studio of some kind, that it wasn't adjacent to the lot itself.
But. I see. Yeah, it could be.
So yeah, do you have any plans for your remains?
I know for a while I was thinking whatever happens, like whether I get cremated or buried, just make sure to cut my head off first. Just in case there's anything like some experience where you're dead, but you're still like somehow conscious and your nerves still work or something weird like that, where you can feel it, but you can't actually react. So it's like, just in case, sever my head from my body, then you can do what you want with my body.
Because do what you want with my body, do what you want with my body.
That's what I was thinking. Long story short. Yes. But that was it. And I'm not too serious about it. I was just like, I just had like this phobia isn't the right word, but I was like, I'd feel a lot more comfortable if they chopped my head off and then maybe put my head in a jar and display it for all to see.
If your reanimated corpse long after you've departed, it came back and terrorized people, you'd feel better if it didn't.
Yes. I would feel better if it didn't do that, but it'd be kind of cool if it did.
It would be impressive.
Yes.
So I'll put that as option three on my tiers, which would be before I actually die, so I think we've maybe talked on the show before about some of the groundbreaking surgery that's being done where they, like for gunshot victims and stuff like that, where they're bleeding out and they don't have time to repair all the holes before they would bleed to death internally. Mm-hmm. They pump the blood out of the body, replace it with a chilled saline solution at like 40 degrees or something like that, and then bring the body, they bring the core temperature down into the 60s while they're pumping this chilled saline through it, and they do the surgery and then pump the blood back in, and people can recover and they can also survive, like, you know, 4 to 6 times longer with that method than they would be if they try to just do the surgery.
So I do remember us talking about this, but I don't remember. Has this actually been done?
Yeah, it's been done, I guess, from the reading I've done, at least several dozen times. Like,
wow.
I want to say it was like at Johns Hopkins or somewhere like in Baltimore, if I remember correctly. But, you know, like emergency room trauma surgery, basically, where it's like, if we don't try this method, they're going to die.
They're going to die
no matter what we try. Yeah, right.
Like, so we don't. Like we either do the procedure and maybe they'll die, and you know, maybe they'll survive, or we don't do the procedure and they will for sure not survive.
Right. And we'll just wasted a bunch of time in surgery. But yeah, so if we hadn't talked about that in depth on the show before, you should definitely check it out because it's fascinating. But that would be option three, would be right before before I die, assuming that it's of natural causes, to have my body, reduced into that suspended animation state, and then just kept there in like a with a saline pump in a chilled chamber somewhere, just waiting for technology to evolve until they can like plant some new consciousness in my brain or something.
Are you breathing while this is are you unconscious, or are you dead, but in this weird suspended state? Is your heart pumping? Are you breathing? Is there brain activity? Do you know?
I don't know. I want to say that it's like there's still on paper brain activity, but it's essentially like it lowers your metabolic rate so far that it's like the pilot light is on in the stove, basically, right? Like you're not going to cook anything with it, but yes, there's still technically a flame there. That's my understanding of what's happening.
Okay. That's pretty neat.
But so using that, it's like they can essentially ration the amount of oxygen still in your body for hours instead of minutes.
Crazy stuff. Nature is amazing.
And medical science in some instances. It's pretty
Yes.
crazy. And again, that's the layperson explaining something they read once, like 2 or 3 years ago. So probably inaccurate, but I know there's some, I'm not too far from it.
There's a kernel of truth.
There's a kernel in there. So, shifting gears rather abruptly to the topics we intended to cover today. I had mentioned that I wanted to introduce a topic which crossed my mind as I was driving a couple days ago. I don't know if you've had this happen before, but when I'm on the road and I pass someone who has their turn signal on that clearly doesn't intend for it to be on, like they're just driving and driving with the turn signal on. When I get back in front of them, I usually like flip my turn signal on a couple times to try to get them to think about the fact that turn signals exist and that maybe people turn them on accidentally sometimes or like forget to turn them off. But as I saw this car that had its turn signal on and wasn't turning, it got me thinking, like, do people ever actually realize that they left their turn signal on? Or do they just, the next time, like when they go to, if their turn signal is on to go left, they just go flip it to go right and never even realize that their turn signal was on the whole time. They think it's just, they went from the middle non-indicating position to whatever their next turn was going to be.
I mean, I've been in those shoes before, and most, I would say 90% of the time, if not even more frequently, it's because I put the turn signal on to make a turn or a lane change. No, lane changes, always make sure to flip it off. But if you're making a turn and then you think it's going to automatically turn off, but you didn't turn enough for it to reach that threshold, and you're listening to something that's loud enough where you can't actually hear it, then you're just assuming that it went off. Because then otherwise you're not, if you think it went off, you're not going to bother looking at your dash to see the turn signal blinking. So you just think it turned off and you're none the wiser. And I would imagine that's what's going on with them. And
So you would.
for me, I notice, I'll just incidentally look down at my dash, say, oh crap, my turn signal's still on.
Yeah. I was going to say there's a lot of things on your dash that have nothing to do with turn signals. You may want to periodically check
Yes.
and see that your turn signal's on. But the other thing that goes along with that. So as that thought crossed my mind, the other thing I was thinking about is if you're at a stoplight and the person in front of you doesn't go as soon as the light turns green, if you're in a big city or something, there's no hesitation to honk. Like where we live, it's a lot less common.
Oh, I
But,
honk.
oh, you do.
Oh, I've definitely, this is something I was going to bring up when you introduced the top, right? It was on my mind to bring up. People in around this town are, so again, as you know, and as our readers may have forgotten, I grew up in the Twin Cities in Minnesota, which is a much bigger metro area, and I've noticed that the drivers up there are noticeably better than here in our small, well, medium-sized town, Iowa. And one of the things is that people will not know, like the front of the line people won't know when the light turns green. And I've learned to give them like 1 second grace, and then I'm honking.
So here's my thought is that the person in the front of the line, whenever they hear a honk, I think they always assume that the light just turned green and the person behind them is just rude. Because if you're not looking at the light, it's the last time you saw it was red, and then this as soon as you look up, it's going to be green. So there's always this perception of the person behind you is just in a hurry, and the light just turned green, and they're ungracious and rude. Even if you were sitting there for 10 seconds at a red or at a green before they decided to honk their horn, right? Like they have the person in front has no idea how much time you waited to honk your horn, if it was 1 second or 10 seconds. And so
Sure.
I think there's always this thought in the back of their mind. I'm like, ah, who's honking at me? Right? Like the light just turned green. It's like, well, it just turned green for you because you just looked at it. But for everybody else who's been looking at it, it was, 3 or 4 seconds ago, whatever.
So I appreciate the theory, but what is making you think that most drivers in their shoes are thinking that, as opposed to, oh crap, I was looking at my phone. Sorry, I'll go.
Just because they don't have any concept of time for how long the light has been green, right? So
I agree.
it could have been just turned green, right? And they didn't cause any delay, really. The person behind them is just a jerk.
But I mean, like, have you experienced, like, when you've honked, like, even if it was like something ridiculous, like 5 seconds later, that the person like flipped you off or gave some sort of indication that they thought you were in the wrong? Or are you just speculating that this is what's going through their mind?
I'm just speculating, but I can't answer the first part of that question because I don't honk at people.
Ever?
Just as a rule, no, I don't honk.
Oh man, I think our town has. I used to never honk at people. Also, it was like an extreme circumstance before I moved here, and ever since I moved here, my horn and I have become well acquainted.
Wow.
But it's usually in that context where people don't go, like they're just sitting there. Like if you're at the front of the line, you have a responsibility. No looking at your phone, like
You do.
you're watching the intersection. And you're watching for that green light. And if people break that responsibility, yeah, I'm going to let them know about it. Because they're not just holding me up, they're holding everybody else behind up too. And particularly the person who's going to miss the green light because they had to wait that extra second.
It's an implicit social contract that the person in the front of the line is paying attention so that they get rolling at the correct point.
Exactly. Same thing happened at this doesn't happen as often, but it has happened. There was one time, it was shortly after I moved, and it was the most egregious example of it. And it may be the only example of it. I don't remember there being any other instances like this where it was relatively heavy traffic, and I'm coming up to a intersection, and it's a four-way stop, but there wasn't any cross traffic. It was just ongoing and opposite bound traffic, and there's a line of maybe three cars that I'm in. The first car stops, waits its turn, goes. Second car stops, waits its turn, goes. Third car in front of me stops, waits his turn, waits the next guy's turn, waits the other guy's turn. Like the people oncoming traffic, like the first guy stopped. Knew that the car in front of me was supposed to go first, kind of hesitated, then went anyway. The guy behind him pulls up, stops, and is like, waits there for a while, and then just decides to go. And then when the third guy pulled up and was like, what are we doing here? That's when I was like, oh, buddy. And then I laid on my horn. Not laid on, I just honked. But I was like, what are you doing? There's no excuse for that. If you're lost, then pull over into like a parking lot or something. Don't park at a stoplight or a stop sign when there's people behind you.
Maybe it was somebody who had was like an immigrant or something and didn't understand the principle, saw everybody stopping and going, but hadn't yet deduced what the rationale was for who got to go when.
Unless they were driving illegally, I don't think so, because that's something that they would have learned at getting their driver's license.
That's true, but it could have been illegal, or they could have, just gotten paralyzed in the moment. It was their turn, and they freaked out, and they're like, "Oh, I know I learned this, but I can't remember who goes."
Yeah, well, trial by fire, buddy.
Fire being Jack lighting his horn under your behind.
But that mean right, this wasn't like he hesitated for like 2 seconds, then I laid onto him, right? He let two cars go after he was already supposed to have gone.
Maybe he wasn't looking at the stop sign. He was waiting for it to turn green, and then it never did.
Well, now he's going to learn not to do that at stop signs. What
Now
other
he's gonna win.
etiquettes have you noticed? Like,
Driving?
yeah, like are these peeves or are these just interesting things that you've noticed?
No, those are just interesting things. I do get annoyed by honking. I think it's completely unnecessary. I also, what are the things, right? People who change lanes without signaling, typically the people who are like weaving in and out of traffic from, slow lane to passing, trying to get to wherever their self-important self needs to be. That annoys me. Oh, and the big one. I do not at all believe in the zipper merging at the cones methodology. Like, when you see the sign, you get over and you do the zipper when you see the sign, not at the cones. And then there's always somebody bombing up along the side, like, "Oh, what am I going to do? I got to keep driving forward. I can't, couldn't possibly slow down and merge in where there's a space. I gotta."
Yep. I got into an argument. Not, I mean, it was like a friendly argument. We were just kind of giving each other crap with a coworker a few years ago because I had the same sentiment as you, but he was arguing that no, that is the best way of doing it, and to do it otherwise, you're just going to make things worse.
That's what people say who drive in the left lane, like jack wagons. They're making excuses for themselves. I don't believe
Well,
it.
if you do it well, right? I can understand the sentiment of we want to get as much out of this two-lane road as we can, given that we're about to lose a lane. I can understand that. But the problem is, for it to work well, everybody has to be cooperating and working as a team. Then the zipper merge is really nice. But when you get jerks who try to like cut in front of people and stuff, that's where it becomes problematic. And that happens a lot at the zipper merge.
It's kind of so this reminds me of our mutual friend Donnie Lale posted something yesterday about it was a scenario in which you're offered to
Oh,
take a
yeah.
red pill or a blue pill. And if more than 50% of the people who are offered a pill take the blue pill, then everyone lives. But if they don't, only the people who take the red pill will live.
Yep.
So in essence, if you take the red pill, you're guaranteed to live. But if more than 50% of the people take the blue pill, then everyone lives.
Yep.
Which is actually interesting because everybody could just take the red pill.
Oh, you should post that because that's a. I
There's
didn't think of that.
no constraint against people taking how many people could take the red pill. So if 100, like, why not take the red pill?
Well, hold on. Like, here's the thing. I would agree. Well, I guess if you are coordinating with everybody, then it doesn't matter which one you take. As long as everybody takes the same color pill, right? If you have 100 people in a room
Correct,
and say, okay, which pill do we take? We just all have to take the same color. Who cares what, like as long as we do that, we're in the clear. The catch is you don't get to coordinate with them, right? What do you think humanity is gonna pick, like your average human is gonna pick? That's the
It's
question.
like Family Feud, basically, for the lives of yourself and everyone else who voted in the survey. But so it's along those lines, right? Where in my theory here is that the people who have a cooperative outlook on the world and are try I'll say trying to do the right thing, merge early, and the people who are taking the I'm gonna do the quote unquote logical thing that's most efficient, that also, oh, side benefit, allows me to shortcut all the cooperative people and get to the front of the line, merge late. So it's a red pill or a blue pill scenario. And you've got to make your bets based on what you expect most people are going to do.
I guess I still feel like I agree. The zipper merge, it would I think it would be I prefer it when people don't wait to the last minute. However, if they do wait to the last minute but then they merge responsibly, I will give them a pass.
I'll give them a pass when it's someone who sees it approaching, is like slowing down to match traffic and like actively working with a turn signal on trying to merge in.
Yeah.
When it's somebody ramming up along at like 70 miles an hour while the right lane is going 30, right? And they're clearly just going for the front of the line, making no attempt to merge. Like, okay, this clearly wasn't about a zipper for you. This was about how far can I get? Because all these jokers are just,
Yep.
getting in line and being goody two shoes. Which, oddly enough, so at one point in time in my life, I was driving back from Michigan to Iowa, and it was in like the midst of the summer surge, and there was traffic or road construction going on near Holland, Michigan, which is always congested with people headed back from the weekend. And so it was like bumper to bumper pretty much. And there was one of those situations where I think it was going from 3 to 2 lanes or 2 to 1. And I shouldn't have done it, I'll freely admit, but I started straddling lanes, like probably 2/3 out into the lane that was merging. And someone, and it wasn't like a long stretch, this was like maybe a couple hundred yards in front of the cones. Someone came behind me. This was like an SUV with a trailer and a boat on it, came flying up at like, I don't know, they had to have been going at least 50, and we were barely crawling along. And they went through like the median in the grass around me so that they could get into the merging lane in front of me.
That's the risk you run, buddy. You're lucky he didn't clip you.
I was just like, what on earth? Like, you're literally off-roading so that you can get to the front of the merge line.
Something
Blew my
similar
mind.
happened to me last time I went up to the cities. There was a stretch of road construction, so like the interstate got congested in kind of like the middle of nowhere. I mean, it was near kind of a medium-sized city, but I've never seen it get congested there before. Really random. And there was a left lane that did eventually, merge into the right. And this semi truck kept blocking the lane to prevent people from going around them. I think kind of in the same vein as what you were doing. But this guy was doing it like a mile up. It was like a ridiculous distance away. And I don't know why he was doing it. I did eventually get around him. I think he
Oh,
just
so
let
you
his
were the
guard
guy.
down. Well, yeah, but again, this wasn't like, and I wasn't even going all that fast. There was plenty of lane left. There was like a sign that said, like left lane ends in 1 mile or something when he was
Yeah.
doing this.
I've definitely noticed there are some, I guess I'd call them vigilante truckers, who like take it upon themselves to enforce certain behaviors when you get into situations like that.
It was very annoying. Truckers, I will give them all like I will go out of my way to accommodate them, but they can also be really oblivious and not responsible. And that really cheeses me off. Now, there's a difference between being irresponsible and maybe just not being that good of a driver, or like he's just got a lot going on. And this guy, for example, is I would definitely qualify him as being irresponsible. He should not have been doing what he did.
Well, that's even different though than like what I see a lot, which is drivers who are weaving all over their lane, whether they're eating or falling asleep or whatever it is, right? It's just like There's nothing that makes me more nervous on the roadway than a semi that can't hold its lane consistently. And I'm like, do I even try to pass this person, or am I going to get run off the road? You know, like, it's just,
yep,
it's so unpredictable with such a large piece of equipment.
The only time where I'm not really sketched out, like, oh, what is this driver doing, is if it's a really windy day and you can see that the wind is really doing a number on him.
Yeah.
Then I feel like, oh, he's just trying to keep it under control. But yeah. Yeah. It's like when you're driving a semi truck, like I will, again, like I understand you got a lot that you're dealing with. I'll go out of my way to help you out, a lot more out of my way than I would for just a pedestrian car. But at the same time, like, buddy, you got to be kind of more on the ball than your average driver here. Like, you got to do your part too.
What is a pedestrian car? Is that like a Flintstones kind of thing, or?
Yes.
I like it. I probably wouldn't go out of my way for them either.
Oh, this brought up a point, but I can't remember what it was. I'll remember it later, or maybe not. Who knows? Oh, wait, maybe this was it. So another peeve that I have that, again, water, like our town is very infamous for, at least compared to where I grew up, is people love, absolutely adore going under the speed limit.
Ooh.
There's a stretch by where I live on a main road, and it's a 45 mile an hour speed limit. People just adore going 35 miles an hour, and I have zero idea why.
Do you ever like, I make a game out of when I'm in a situation like that and there's someone deviating from what I would consider the acceptable norms of driving etiquette, I make a game out of trying to guess a description of the person before I pass them.
Yep, I do that too.
What have you noticed any trends amongst those people that you've passed driving slowly there?
Old.
Thank you.
They're old. And
I was going to ask, but I wanted before, like, I walked myself out of it before I, planted the idea. I wanted to see if you would come up with it on your
own. Oh, no, definitely more often than not. Old, maybe, that might be the only consistency I've seen.
Yep.
And Jeff Foxworthy years ago had a joke, like, why are old, and basically boiled down to, like, why are old people of all people going the slowest? Like, they're the ones with the least time left. They should be flying to where they need to go.
Well, if you can't see very well, hear very well, and your response time is bad, you gotta give yourself a larger buffer before you run into anything. So that means slowing down.
I guess, but it's also ironic too, because they really do have the most driving experience.
Yeah. Which, oddly enough, so this has kind of been becoming a topic in my life because I have grandparents, and Sarah's grandma is at the age where basically they're not being permitted to drive by their children because of their declining capabilities. But it's bonkers to me that's dependent on the family basically saying, like, you're a hazard on the roads. You know what I mean? Like, we don't, I appreciate the fact that we, you know, when you get a driver's license, we err on the side of freedom, and basically you can have it until you prove that you shouldn't. But it also kind of seems like you shouldn't have to run somebody over before we reach a point where we're like, you probably shouldn't be driving anymore. And I also get it's a really loaded topic, because for someone who's had freedom of movement and mobility their whole life to suddenly lose their keys, that's a substantial emotional trauma, I guess I would call it, to not have that freedom of movement anymore. But
I would agree. But at the same time, like, it's a 2-ton killing machine.
Yeah, it just seems... It seems bonkers that there's no real formal way to walk back a driver's license once it's been issued, unless you actually commit some sort of moving violations. Maybe there should be tickets issued for driving too far under the speed limit more frequently.
I mean, they're in Minnesota. If you drive slow in the left lane, you will get, you can get it pulled over and given a ticket.
Indiana did something like that maybe 4 or 5 years ago too, trying to keep the passing lane clear. Actually, that is another peeve of mine. When you're on the highway, like a two-lane highway, and there's not that much traffic, and there's just someone sitting in the left lane, mile after mile, for no good reason.
A two-lane or a four-lane?
I mean, like a controlled traffic divided highway. So two lanes both going the same direction.
Okay, I got you. When you said two-lane, I think it meant like there's one lane going north and one lane going south.
Yeah, someone's just driving in the wrong lane. As my dad said all the time growing up, I pay taxes on both sides of the road. It's like, yeah, that's not so you can use them both at the same time. But oh man,
speaking of the actual, so two things I wanted to know. One of them is, and I was talking about this with somebody recently. It may have been you. It certainly wasn't on the podcast, though. So if it was you, at least our listeners will be, their lives will be elucidated. But for a while now, because there's two ways that I can take to go back up to the cities. There's the more direct, fast, it's interstate most of the way path, but it's not as... it's a bit more boring and not as good scenery. And then there's the scenic route, which on a good day will take just as much, like it doesn't add any time. It's not actually inherently slower. The downside is there's about an hour stretch of the 3 hours and 45 minute drive where it is just a two-lane highway. And kind of going back to the under the speed limit thing, people love going like 52 miles an hour on like a 55 mile an hour speed limit highway. Now that's one thing, but you know, this is Iowa. It's pretty flat. There are some good stretches where you can see well far enough away to pass the guy, right? Go around him and continue on your merry way. But the problem, there's two problems. One, a lot of people love going slow on those highways. So you end up like having to pass so many people. And it's just inherently dangerous and annoying. You can't just cruise and kind of zone out. Like you have to be on the ball looking for opportunities to pass and executing the pass well. So that's frustrating. But the thing that really pees me, because if somebody wants to go slow, even on a highway like that, that's their right. I'm not saying that they shouldn't do it. I'm annoyed that they are, but I'm not going to tell them that they're necessarily in the wrong. But what I do think is in the wrong is when you come up to somebody who's going slow and then you kind of just sit on their butt, not tailgating them. You're just following behind them fairly close. And then you're matching their speed. You're not trying to pass them. You're just kind of camping behind them. And the reason why I think that's really, really wrong is because when somebody like me comes up who does want to pass, now I have to pass two cars at once, which is much more dangerous than passing one, because you have to pass the full length of the car and the buffer behind and in front of the first car, then whatever buffer he had between him and the first car, and then that car's full length and then the buffer in front. So if you have two cars, it's really like three or four times the distance. And it's like, buddy, look, two options. Either pass the guy, so I only have one guy to pass, or back off a little bit so I can leapfrog you.
There you have it.
One time, there was a pack of three cars so tightly on each other's butts that I couldn't leapfrog them. And I was like, are you kidding me, people? But then eventually, it was, you know, all the stars aligned. I saw like a mile or more ahead of me. There was no oncoming traffic and we were going down a hill. So I said, all right, pop my blinker on, got in the left lane, floored it. And I passed all three cars at once.
So my takeaway from these stories is that you're that guy. That's what I'm determining here.
I'm not that guy. These guys are going like 55 miles an hour on like a 60 mile per hour highway. A slug of three cars not leaving me any room to leapfrog them.
So I'll defend the second person in line. I'm not going to defend the person who's in front. Although I will say states out west in national parks, places like Alaska, whatever, have figured this out where they just put in periodic slow moving vehicle turnoffs so that traffic can get past them, which I think is a fantastic idea that you implemented in more places, especially if long stretches like that.
If sure. people obey them.
Sure. But they can't obey them if they're not there. So that's the first step. So in defense of the person in second place, I've been that person. And there's a lot of times where I want to pass because I too am frustrated by the person in front of me, but not necessarily that stretch, but on a lot of the two lane roads in that area, it is very difficult to find a place where you can pass safely because there's rolling hills. You can't see very far, or there's a curve, or there's enough traffic coming the other way that you can never find a gap. So then you're just stuck because it's like, if I drift too far back and give them a bunch of room, then somebody leapfrogs me. But maybe they're just a more aggressive driver and are willing to take that risk that I don't think is an appropriate level of safety. But it's like, I want to pass. So I want to be ready to go at a moment's notice when I see that opening. So I don't want to drift back and leave a quarter mile and to let the person in front of me know that I'm ready to pass, but there's just not an opportunity to do it. And I've, especially on 20 between like Dubuque and, why am I forgetting the name of the town in Illinois? Rockford. Between Dubuque and Rockford on 20.
Does 20 turn into a two-lane highway after Dubuque?
Yes. On the other side of the Mississippi.
Okay.
And it's like 55 winding, big rolling hills, turns and everything.
Yep.
And I've been on that road probably for the better part of 40 minutes stuck behind somebody trying to find an opportunity to pass. And there just wasn't one where I could justify getting in the left lane and hammering it with the amount of visibility that I had.
Okay. Yep. I know. I agree. Right. And I would say a lot of times when I pull up behind a slug of two or more cars, and if I can tell that the guy behind the lead car is, you know, you can see him drifting over into the left lane, like pretty frequently trying to gauge if there's enough space. When I see that, it's like, okay, this guy's trying to pass. I'll trust him to go when he feels safe. I'll just need to, you know, I'll need to wait because it's not really up to him. But the problem was in this particular scenario, one, the reason why I felt it necessary to pass three cars at once is because I had been driving behind this slug long enough where I knew that that second car had plenty of opportunity to pass and chose not to. Same thing with the car behind him in front of me. Both those guys had the opportunity and they weren't taking those opportunities. Second point is I had enough of a gap to safely not, it wasn't even a close call. I had more than enough time and space to pass three cars. And that lead car or that second, the guy behind the lead car, two cars ahead of me, still didn't take that opportunity. So I feel justified.
So
and the thing is, they may have been, one other point is they may have been in a group. Right. So
it's
if there was
possible.
Definitely. But in that case, then leave enough room to get leapfrogged.
So this reminds me of, there's an instance where I was driving, I think it was, again, driving back from Michigan, and it was between Cedar Rapids and Waterloo on 380. I was headed north after dark, and I had gotten somewhere north of, like, Marion, Center Point area. And there was somebody, I'm trying to remember, I passed them. I think I passed them, and then they like sped up after I passed them so that not to pass me, but just so that they were like
in your blind
spot, right? Not in my blind spot, but they were basically, because I was passing them, I should have pulled away and I had my cruise on. But after I passed them, instead of pulling away, they were like glued to my butt for a few miles. And it was long enough where it was like, okay, if you're actually going the same direction, then you need to like give me some room so you're not just hanging off my bumper or you need to pass me one way or the other. Like they were in that zone where they shouldn't just be sitting there. You know, they're like too close. And so I was like, what are they doing? I couldn't figure out. So I just took my cruise off and gradually started slowing down. Mm. And because the speed limit's like 70 in there, I got down to like 55 maybe.
Yeah.
Before they finally put on their blinker and went around me. So they were just slowing down at the same rate. And I don't know, maybe this was a couple of years ago, but maybe they had a new car with adaptive cruise in it. And so it was just adjusting for them and they didn't notice. But I was like, how do you go from 70 to 55 before you're finally like, that's too much. I'm going to get around this guy.
So I had a similar experience recently. It was sometime this year. So one thing, you know, like the whole people that we talked about it already, the slow people in the left lane. One thing that I've always wanted to do is when I see somebody holding up traffic in the left lane, to get ahead of them in the right lane and then get in front of them and not like cut them off. Like just, you know, I'm getting in the left lane ahead of them at a safe distance, but then I just slowly start ticking away at my cruise control speed to encourage them to, oh, this guy's going so slow in the left lane. What a jerk. So ironically, get over in the right lane to pass me. And then I just floor it ahead, giving the people behind him the space to pull out in front before he has a chance to get back in the left lane, clogging it back up. And I did try doing that one time. I was looking for an opportunity over the last year or so, maybe even 2 years. And I finally got an opportunity where I felt like it was safe to do, because there have been some times where I really wanted to do it, but it just felt too risky or dangerous or something. So I finally do it. And just like you, I get down to 50 miles an hour, whereas before this person was going like maybe 65.
Yeah.
And still not going out and still not getting over. And like there was so much traffic that was passing us on the right, and I was like,
then you become the bottleneck, right?
Which is like, right, but that's deliberately causing a bottleneck bottleneck. But in the meantime, before the real bottleneck pulls over, you look like the jerk.
Right.
So I waited till the point of embarrassment, and then finally was like, screw it, and then I went back up to 70 or 75, whatever I was at before.
I've definitely done that before. At least once, I don't remember, a handful of times maybe. And I think in at least one of the instances was successful in getting the person to move over. But yeah, I'd say most of the time it seems like they're just completely oblivious.
Yeah. Obliviosity is so, so annoying to me.
But I can say, as someone who's been behind one of those stacks before, if I saw somebody do that maneuver where they passed in the right, got in front, and then slowed down, I think you got to slow down, not rapidly but fast enough that it's obvious you're doing it intentionally, that it's not just like, because otherwise if you're up there for 5 minutes before they finally get over, it's gonna be like, oh well, that guy was the log jam, you know, not the actual person.
But maybe I wasn't being ambitious enough.
You know, just slam on the brakes.
Yeah, just brake check them.
Yikes. An even more level of annoying is there's, I think I was driving back from Purdue to Iowa on 74, somewhere around Peoria, Illinois. And there was it's the highway's two lanes there. There was a semi passing another semi.
Oh no.
I know. And it was like speed matched almost. I mean, they had to have been within like a 10th of a mile an hour of each other, if that.
Yeah.
Because it was seriously, he was in the process of making a pass for more than 10 minutes before he was like actually passed and then able to get over so that traffic could resume. So it was just literally a rolling roadblock. And I don't know, maybe there was some sort of a police operation happening ahead of us that I didn't know about or something, but it was just like traffic was literally piled up behind these two semis because there's nothing to do.
I can understand if a semi needs to pass, but why does he need to, like, why can't he just slow down by 0.1 miles an hour?
That, yes, I've wondered that. It's like, if you're going to go that slow in the past, then you shouldn't be passing. Just get in behind him and enjoy the better gas mileage.
Yeah, enjoy the drafting. I have seen times where, you know, a semi is passing another semi and is going at what I would call like a respectable passing speed, given that I know semi trucks, when it comes to like getting close to 70 miles an hour, they can only go so fast. But it still takes a while because, you know, one, the semi trucks are just so long. And two, to me, it seems like they are trained to leave one whole truck and trailer length before they move over in front of the guy they just passed. So in essence, they have to go two lengths up rather than just the one. So that can, you know, add some time. But when you can tell that, okay, they're going like 2 or 3 miles an hour faster, so they're doing a good, you know, putting in a good effort, it's just going to take a while, I can understand that.
That's
one of the things. Say that again?
I said they're going at a good clippity clip.
Yeah. Like for a semi, at least, like at that point, it's like, that's one of the things where, you know, I'm going to be accommodating to the guy.
Or a gal, as the case may be.
Yeah, could be.
One thing I've also noticed too, is that on level ground, they may be able to go past somebody, but then like if the semi that they're passing has a lighter load or something, then the, you know, when they start climbing a hill, they'll lag back. And so they don't have nearly the consistency of being able to execute an overtaking maneuver that a passenger vehicle does, because they're using most of their reserve power just to haul weight around instead of like cars.
Yeah. Their inconsistent speed, it irks me. I get it. So I'm not going to like fault them for it or say they're bad drivers. It's just unfortunate.
Yeah. They should have more horsepower.
Even if a truck is going, like, you know, going at a good speed to the point where I don't feel like I need to pass them, I will still maybe 3 times out of 5 pass them anyway, just because the inconsistency of their speed can get on my nerves.
Going back to your comment about being trained to leave one full truck length, have you noticed like the trucker etiquette? So like when you pass one of them, and then sometimes even before you put on your turn signal to get back over, they'll double flick their lights at you, like to give you, let you know that there's enough room and you can get over whenever you're ready. Have you seen that before?
No, I'm not. Can you, I didn't quite follow that procedure. Can you?
So like you're in the left lane, you've just passed a semi, and at some point, once your rear bumper clears their front bumper,
mm-hmm.
whether you've put on your turn signal or not, they'll often flash their lights at you, their headlights, twice, as like an indicator that you've cleared them and you can now get over. You don't have to try and check your mirrors and stuff like that. You can just move over.
Oh, no.
Like as a courtesy thing.
I've never noticed that. But, you know, I'm going up to the Twin Cities tomorrow, doing a day trip. That'll be interesting. I'll look for it.
Are you going to be driving in the dark at all on this day trip?
I hope not. I want to leave after sunrise and get back before sunset.
Well, you probably won't notice it then, but you may.
I should be able to do that. I'm just helping my mom with some work at her house. It's only going to take like an hour or two, but then go get something to eat. Ketchup, be good.
You're getting ketchup to eat?
Yes, we're just gonna eat a bowl of ketchup each.
Wow, that's startling.
Gonna be absolutely disgusting.
I feel like you need to do a report out in our next episode on how your bowl of ketchup was.
Oh, it's just so sugary.
Oh man, I mean, I could think of worse things to eat, but yeah, it's not high on my list.
No. I've, in my experience, anything that I used to put ketchup on, because I would eat ketchup as a kid, because you're a kid and you don't know any better. But I would find most contexts where you use ketchup, anything like hot sauce or maybe some other sort of savory sauce, tomato based, is better.
I don't really use hot sauce that much. But I'm also not a spicy food person, so, or a tomato-based sauce person in general.
I love hot sauce. Give me that sriracha. I'll put that stuff on anything.
I only ever put sriracha in pho. That's what I put sriracha in.
You said you never put it in pho?
No, I only put it in pho. That's the only food that I intentionally add sriracha to.
Okay, well, that's a good thing to put it in.
It's like it was made there, for it or something.
There is a sriracha shortage right now, and there pretty much has been ever since COVID started.
I heard that.
Yeah, there's been two shortages. So right around when COVID started, there was a shortage, and I don't think COVID was the only reason why. I think they incidentally also had a poor harvest that year. On top of probably supply management issues that led to the shortage. So like it wasn't on the shelves for a while. And then it came back for a bit and then it disappeared again. And I learned that, yeah, they've had another horrible harvest and I can't remember why. And they just don't know when it's going to be back on the shelves. And it cheeses me off because I love sriracha.
So and what I'm hearing is
I've yet to find a hot sauce that can suitably replace it.
Have you ever had Valentina?
I don't recognize it by name.
It's a little glass jar. I think it's Mexican, but that's one hot sauce I've always really enjoyed because I felt like it had flavor without being super spicy in a way that sriracha does in limited quantities.
Does this hot sauce have like a picture of a woman on it? And it's got like a wooden kind of spherical cork or not? Cork?
No.
Okay.
No, you're thinking, I think that's Tapatio maybe.
Yeah, that could be. Okay.
Valentina's has a orange, the mild one has an orange plastic flip cap. And then the I don't know what you want to call it, spicy has a black plastic flip cap.
Oh, okay. I'll keep an eye. I just went to the grocery store today, so I'll look for it maybe next week if I remember.
Yeah, I think it's a pretty solid. But the comment I was going to make is, oh, so if we have another pandemic lockdown for any reason, what I heard was forget getting all the extra toilet paper. You should be stocking up on sriracha.
Yeah.
Just I mean, anticipating a shortage.
That's just good life advice in general.
Yeah. Where do you want the palette? Oh, just anywhere. Anywhere is fine.
Exactly. Well, I've noticed that a lot of hot sauces that that I've been trying to use, you know, well, if I can't get sriracha, maybe I'll try this. So many of them have like this are very Tabasco like, and mm-hmm. I'm not a big fan of Tabasco.
Hmm.
Like it's too vinegary or something.
Like, are you thinking like Frank's kind of stuff or?
No, like right here, the sauce I'm using now is called Melinda's Creamy Style Ghost Pepper Wing Sauce and Condiment. And mm-hmm. I try to go for, like I always look at the ingredients and if they add sugar, it's like a no. This one has no sugar in it. Pretty wholesome ingredients to it. Water, white vinegar, habanero pepper mash, cayenne pepper mash, carrot salt, Buta Jolokia pepper mash, which is ghost pepper mash, canola vegetable oil, white onion, lime juice, garlic, xanthan gum, natural butter flavor, which it describes as vegan, which is interesting. But so no sugar, no complex, you know, ingredients, just all natural, good flavoring stuff. But still, it's very Tabasco-y. I wonder if it's the vinegar.
I don't know the answer to that question.
Ooh, I am going to run out of... I forgot to get new mustard today. So when I get more mustard this week, I will check out that... what was it called? Valentina's?
Valentina, yeah.
Val or Val?
Val. Like okay. Valentine, but with an A instead of an E.
Okay.
And the label, it's not a lady. It has... I think it's the state in Mexico that they're from. So it's just a wonky-looking... geometric blob.
Gotcha. Do you know if they offer it at Walmart? Because that's where I go, because I'm classy.
I believe so. It's pretty ubiquitous.
Okay.
But it's like a little round glass bottle. Yeah. So I did not think we were going to reach the point in this episode where we... heard Jack reading off the ingredients from his salsa, but we did. and I can't say I'm upset about it.
It was a good, it's good wholesome entertainment.
Yes. That could be a whole episode where we just read ingredients from the back of things we find in our refrigerator.
There's an episode, or not episode, there's a video on YouTube where, do you know Vsauce?
Vsauce?
Yeah, have you ever heard of that channel?
No.
Oh, kind of like a science, just cool fact stuff guy. There's a video where he just reads prime numbers for 3 hours.
Oh man.
And it's not so much reads, like he's sitting in a loafer. He kind of looks like, stately with like a cup of tea or coffee. And he'll just say, I've never watched the full thing, kind of obviously, but I think I've seen like a clipper of it here or there. But he's just like, takes a sip of his tea. 17, 19, 23. And he just does that, like in, or I think in order for
Nice.
3 hours.
Oh man. So I think I know you're pressed for time, so I want to wrap it up here. I did want to briefly mention that I've heard from a couple people. We had a new listener sign up to be a guest,
Ooh.
so we can work them into our schedule. And one of the others who'd responded previously but had scheduling conflicts said that he's gonna be available here in the evenings starting in a few weeks. So I think probably mid to late September we'll be able to get him on to join us, and then we'll have to see with the latest sign up when they're available. So
Cool.
keep
Very
your
good.
ears open for that. We should have some more guests coming up, and we've been adding some new topics as well to our backlog. So I think we've got some pretty interesting ones that'll be fun discussions.
Yeah, there was a topic that we put on like the queue in case we ran out of traffic related stuff, that I think would be very interesting, but we never got to it. So definitely have that to look forward to. I'm going to keep everybody's attention titillated by not revealing what it is.
Excellent. It's I think it's one that a number of people have mused about
Oh,
in over the
yes.
course of their life. They just maybe haven't thought that in depth about it, or haven't realized that they thought about it. But I think as soon as we introduce the topic, we're gonna be like, oh yeah, definitely thought about that before.
Yep, it's a pretty I the question is pretty well in pop culture.
It's one of those things we just kind of take at face value, but I'm curious if we can get to something like a more refined answer than what we take for granted.
Yeah, ever since you introduced it to me, I've been kind of trying to mull it over in my head. I haven't come to any conclusions yet, so.
Good, because we want it to be spontaneous. So, with all that tease and cliffhanger, we will talk to you next time. Take care.